बंदे रूप सनातन रघु जग श्री जीव गोपाल को।
सो वी आर डिस्कसिंग द लिम्स ऑफ ज्ञान योगा. So we have seen few limbs. First, he mentioned Yamadibir Yogapatair Abhyasan Shraddhayanvita. Following the limbs of Ashtanga Yoga with faith, Mayi Bhavena Satyena, considering the form of the Lord to be real, Matkata Shravanena Cha, and hearing pastimes of the Supreme Lord, then Sarvabhuta Samatvena, being equal, one should see all living beings equally, nirvairena, without enmity, aprasangataha, not taking improper association, brahmacharyena, following celibacy, maunena, to observe silence, swadharmena baliyasa, that one should practice one's occupational duties as an offering to the Supreme Lord. This is where we ended before leaving, so we'll continue. Idrachayopalabdena santushto mitabuk munihi vivikta sharana shanto maitra karuna atmavan. Idrachaya opalabdena santushto, one should be happy with whatever comes of its own accord. So Prabhupada writes here, a devotee should only work for such income as it is absolutely necessary. He should be satisfied always with such income and should not endeavor to earn more and more simply to accumulate the unnecessary. Mita book means one should eat with regulation. Prabhupada mentions, this means that one should eat only as much as necessary to maintain the body and soul together. One should not be gluttonous to satisfy the tongue. Later Prabhupada writes, innocent foods like grains, vegetables, fruits, flowers and milk preparations are offered to the Lord, and therefore there is no scope for offering foods which are in the mode of passion and ignorance. Mitabuk. The same Mitabuk comes in the next chapter also. For a Ashtanga Yogi, there Prabhupada writes, Mitabuk means he eats half the stomach, leaves a quarter for water and a quarter for air to circulate. Then he says, Munihi. Munihi means very contemplative. And here Prabhupada writes that a devotee should also be a Muni, which means he must be thinking about how he can serve Krishna. And Prabhupada says, it is also recommended that the devotee should be muni or thoughtful. He should always think of Krishna and how to render better service to the Supreme Lord. That should be his only anxiety. As a materialist is always thoughtful about improving his material condition, a devotee's thought should always be engaged in improving his condition in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he should be a muni. Muni means contemplative. One should reflect. Vivikta Sharanaha, again the same thing comes. One should live in a secluded place. Prabhupada says, Vivikta Sharana for a devotee means a devotee should select a place of residence where everyone is interested in devotional service. Generally, therefore, a devotee goes to a sacred place of pilgrimage where devotees live. That is Vivikta Sharana for a devotee. For him, he should, Vivikta Sharana means, he should stay at a place which is secluded from materialists. Shanta means he should be peaceful. The devotee should not be agitated. He should be satisfied with his natural income, eat only as much as he needs to keep his health, live in a secluded place and always remain peaceful. Peace of mind is necessary for prosecuting Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says. Peace of mind is necessary for prosecuting Krishna consciousness. Then Maitraha, friendly. Like we are discussing these qualities, but while a Jnana Yogi has to endeavor to cultivate these qualities, whereas a devotee has to endeavor to cultivate devotional service. Over a period of time, automatically the qualities manifest. And he should be karuna, compassionate and determined, atmavan. So, till now about 14 qualities we have already seen. Few more qualities will be mentioned in this verse 9 to 11. We'll chant them together. Sanubandhe cha dehesmin akurvan asadagraham jnanena drishta tattvena prakrite purushasya cha nivritta bodhyavastano dori bhutanya darshanah upalabhyatmanatmanam chakshushevarkamatmadrik muktalingam sadabasam asati pratipadyate sato bandhum asachakshu sarvanasyutamadvayam. So he says that akurvan asad agraham asmin dehe cha sanubandhe. He should not have thoughts of I and mine in terms of his body or relatives. He should not have bodily consciousness. He should cultivate. Then, jnanena drishta tattvena. Jnanena means the knowledge which was described in the previous chapter. But that cannot remain as knowledge. Drishta tattvena means realization. By realizing that knowledge, prakrite purushasya cha, of prakriti and purusha, nivritta buddhi avasthano, he should transcend all states of intelligence. Swapa, sushupti and what are the three states? Waking up, jagrati. Jagrati, swapa and sushupti. The states of, all three are states of ignorance for a materialist. But he should transcend and reach the Turiya stage. That's what is mentioned. Nivritta buddhi avasthano. Duri bhuta anya darshana. And he should keep all material objects far away. Consciously. And then, the last quality that is mentioned is, he should realize the Paramatma. Arkam. Chakshusha eva arkam means he should realize the Paramatma by the healthy eye. Healthy eye here means through the eyes of devotion. It doesn't mean premanjana churita. It means with a devotional disposition. It does not mean with pure devotion. It means with a devotional disposition, which means accepting the form of the Lord to be real, worshipping that form of the Lord. One may have alternate desires for mukti or other things, that's fine. But at least one should accept the form of the Lord and worship that form. And who is this Paramatma? It is mentioned, mukta lingam sadabasam asati pratipadyate sato bandhum asachakshur sarvanasyotam advayam. Mukta lingam means he is the object of realization for the liberated souls. Second is sad abhasam. Asati sadabasam means he constantly remains in the temporary material world as the antaryami. So the form of the Lord and his super soul feature is asati sad avasam andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. So in his Paramatma feature, he is constantly present in all living entities or even non-living items. So it is mentioned that asato bandhum asat chakshuhu. Sato bandhum is the cause of prakriti, sarvakarana karanam. Asat chakshuhu, he is the revealer of prakriti's evolutes. that is the material elements. He is the revealer means, it is mentioned that he is the one who gives life to even inanimate objects. In the sense, like Shukadeva Goswami mentions, Bhutair Mahadbir Yaima Puro Vibhu Nirmaya Shete Yadamo Shupurushaha Bhungte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmakaha Solankrishishta Bhagavan Vachamsi Me. In one of the prayers offered by Shukadeva Goswami to the Supreme Lord, he addresses the Lord as Shodasha Shodasha Atmakaha. He says that you are the life of all inanimate objects. If he is the life of inanimate objects, then they should no more be called as inanimate. Isn't it? So it means that as Paramatma, he enters them and allows them to exhibit their nature. Sugar is sweet, salt is salty, water is fluid. It has all its qualities. Even though in the material world, all these things are inanimate, but still they are able to exhibit their quality only because the Supreme Lord as Paramatma enters them and empowers them to act according to their nature. So therefore, here he is mentioning that Asat Chakshuhu, he is the revealer of the Prakriti's evolutes. Therefore, we are able to identify sugar as sugar, salt as salt, water as water, because they don't change their dharma. Why they don't change their dharma? Because the Supreme Lord is present in them as Paramatma. Atma is not there. Yeah. Sarvanusyutam. Sarvanusyutam means he pervades both Prakriti and its evolutes. Which means anda antarastha paramanu chaya antarastham. Alone, advayam. He is one alone. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. The one Lord who who protects all other living entities, provides for them, vidadati kaman, fulfills their desires. So, like that he is describing the 18 qualities that a Jnana Yogi has to endeavor to develop. The last quality being, he must try to realize the super soul. So the super soul realization is not just for Ashtanga Yogi as we might have imagined. Even a Jnana Yogi in this chapter is recommended that he should also realize the super soul. So, to summarize, we have seen the 18 qualities to be cultivated by the practitioner of Jnana Yoga. He says, Sarvabhuta Samatvena, equality to all jivas, Nirvairena, no enmity, Aprasangataha, no material association, Brahmacharya, Mauna, Swadharmena Baliyasa, performing one's occupation as an offering to the Supreme Lord. Yadrichya upalabdena santushto, being satisfied with what comes of its own accord. Mita book, eating moderately. Munihi, contemplative. Vivikta sharano, living in a secluded place. Shantaha, being peaceful. Maitraha, being friendly. Karuna, compassionate. Atmavan, very determined in his efforts. And free from the conceptions of I and mine. And Nivritta Buddhi Avastano, transcending the three states of contaminated intelligence. Stay away from material objects, Duri Bhuta Anya Darshana. And finally, he has to realize the super soul. So, he has to endeavor to achieve these qualities. But one may say, okay, I am ready to practice this path. I am excited. The only thing, yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Usually like the Gyan Yogi, usually this we say Vedanta Vakyeshu Sadharamanta. For a Gyan Yogi, we usually find even in the Sarva Bhattacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu conversation. So we find, generally we used to say that they read the scriptures and they try to interpret the meaning of the scriptures. Like Vedanta Vakyeshu Sadharamanta. Whereas here in the entire description, even once the item of speculating over the scriptures or going through the difficult sections of the scriptures and trying to interpret them in various ways, that has not yet come.
That is understood. That is their main practice. The last full chapter was that only. You know, they try to understand the reflect on the scriptures, mainly the difference between body and soul, and also about the qualitative oneness of the living entity and the Supreme Lord. That they do. It's understood. Apart from that, they practice all these other limbs also.
But like it is not mentioned, because he is talking about the what is the process. So within the process, it is not yet coming.
It will become little more clear when Mother Devahuti asks the question. Because she asks, you know, you talk about this path of jnana, which involves reflecting on these tattvas about which you spoke in the previous chapter. But I don't think this path is, by this path one can achieve liberation like that. So therefore the purpose of describing the whole previous chapter is to indicate that what is it that they reflect on. Yeah. So then one may say that, okay, I'm willing to follow this path, but the only thing is that how can I be sure that the soul exists? And how can I be sure that you say that I have to realize the Paramatma? So, can you explain to me that something like Paramatma exists and the soul exists? So, then I can, you know, apply myself to practicing this path. So, he says, okay, the presence of soul and super soul can be understood through Anuman, inference. So he gives an analogy to explain this. He says, Yata jalasta abhasa stalaste nava drishyate swabhase natata suryo jalaste na divistitah evam trivrat ahankaro botendriya manomayehi swabhasair lakshito nena sadabhase na satyadrik. So he says, Yata jalasta abhasa stalastenava drishyate. He says, just as a reflection of water is reflected on a wall, is inferred to come from the image reflected on water. Okay, I'll just read the translation and then we'll discuss about it. Suryaha divistitaha, and the sun situated in the sky, Sva abhasena tata, is inferred by the reflection on water. This is the analogy. What it means, we will see, that's the second part of the verse. So what he says is, if someone sees a reflection on the wall, immediately he can say that, this reflection means there must be a pool of water outside. So that's what is getting reflected. But merely a pool of water would not create a reflection. There must be some light shining on that water. So he infers that, there is sun up, which is shining on the water, and that reflection is reflected here. Okay, there are two inferences here. One is looking at the reflection on the wall and inferring that there must be a pool of water. And the second inference is, there must be some light source which is shining on that water, because of which this reflection is there. This is Anuman. He is explaining this. So, using this Anuman, he explains, evam, in the same way, trivrat ahankaraha, the jiva which is covered by the three types of ahankara, which manifests in the form of gross body, subtle body, etc. Lakshitaha, the jiva which is present being covered by this trivrit ahankara can be inferred, just like the pool of water was inferred from the reflection on the wall. Similarly, the presence of jiva can presence of that jiva which is covered by this threefold ahankara, which means gross and subtle body, can be inferred swabhasair by its reflection, by the reflection of the jiva. Where does it reflect? Bhuta indriya manomayaihi, in the body, senses and mind. So the reflection of the jiva's presence is reflected in the body, senses and mind, which means he sees that the same body is there, but it's lying without acting. The senses, mind and body are not acting. But in another person, he is moving about, his senses are active, his mind is active, his intelligence is active. The difference is that there must be some animating force which is there in this person's body, but it has left this person's body. So anyone observing a live person and a dead person can come to such a conclusion. Prabhupada always gives this example. Okay. So using inference, one may not understand that this is the soul, he is spiritual in nature, he is eternal, he is 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. All these details one may not understand just by merely seeing. But one thing you can understand is there must be some animating force which is there in this person's body, which has left this person's body. That much we can come infer. Okay. And then, anena, and from this, satyadrik, the paramatma, lakshitaha, he can also be inferred. How? Sad abhasena, by the jiva purified by bhakti. Means, so he looks at the reflection on the wall and he sees that, oh, there must be a pool of water. And then he wants to find out, oh, what is that object that's shining on the pool of water? He goes out and he looks at the water. The clearer that pool of water is, the more closely it will reflect the, it will be a reflection of the sun. The more muddy and muddy that water is, or unclear that water is, it will be very hazily, it will not be a true reflection of what it is reflecting. So, he says, and then when you see a soul which has been purified by a person who has been purified by practice of bhakti, then he more closely reflects the qualities of this absolute truth. So, Prabhupada explains it little more clearly in his purport. He says that by the understanding of the pure soul called Satyadrik, one can see everything as a reflection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A concrete example can be given in this connection. A conditioned soul sees a very beautiful rose and he thinks that this nice aromatic flower should be used for his own sense gratification. This is one kind of vision. A liberated soul, however, sees the same flower as a reflection of the Supreme Lord. He thinks, this beautiful flower is made possible by the superior energy of the Lord. Therefore, it belongs to the Supreme Lord and should be utilized in His service. These are two kinds of vision. The conditioned soul sees the flower for his own enjoyment and the devotee sees the flower as an object to be used in the service of the Lord. In the same way, one can see the reflection of the Supreme Lord in one's own senses, mind and body, that is in everything. With that correct vision, one can engage everything in the service of the Lord, like that. So which means, when you look at a person, when you look at a devotee, he engages everything in someone's service. So one can infer that there must be someone who is very beloved, who is like really the object of this person's association, of this person's affection. And because of his affection to that personality, he is showing such wonderful qualities. So one can infer. But of course, inference has its own limitations, even though we may use it. But inference has its own limitations. Using inference to understand anything is like trying to recreate the original body by looking at the shadow. Looking at a shadow, you can say that, okay, it's a person who is standing is a male. And he must be tall and thin. Seems like he has shaven head. And it looks like he is wearing dhoti kurta. That much we can sort of guess. Okay. And beyond that, and that also depends on how he is standing with respect to the light source. If he is standing sideways, then probably you can even try to guess, okay, he has a sharp nose and things like that. Otherwise, even that. But what complexion he is, what are his qualities, those things we cannot understand. What color dhoti kurta is he wearing? Is he saffron brahmachari or is he white? We do not know. We cannot guess all that using a shadow. So using Anuman to understand the whole thing is like using a shadow to recreate the original. It's not possible completely, but it can definitely give a very, you know, if some shadow is moving in your house and you can become little alert, maybe a thief has broken into the house. Now, it's useful, but it's, one should understand, you know, its utility, how much it is useful. One cannot use Anuman everywhere. One cannot understand the nature of Krishna using Anuman. One cannot understand the nature of the living entity using Anuman. But one can use Anuman to understand that there must be some animating force within the body. Whether it is called soul or what, we cannot. Okay. So here he says that, like that one can use this Anuman to understand the existence of the soul. Because when he looks at the, that the intelligence is working, mind is working, and senses are working, he can understand that there must be some animating force. And when he looks at a purified soul, he can say, oh, his good qualities must be coming because of his affection towards that higher personality, whoever it may be. It may be called Krishna or whatever. That those details he may not know, but at least that much one can infer. Okay, so this is through inference, Anuman. But ultimately, Anuman is inferior. Okay, and this person is not willing to accept Shabda also. So the ultimate praman is actually pratyaksha only. It's not Shabda in one sense. Okay, to start with it's Shabda, but if Shabda remains Shabda and never becomes pratyaksha, we will lose faith in Shabda also, isn't it? Therefore, bhakti is called pratyaksha vagamam. It's experienceable also, okay? Not just, you know, shabdam, or it's not just meant to be heard, it's meant to be experienced also. So ultimately, if shabda has to transform into pratyaksha, only then one's faith in shabda will also increase. So ultimate praman in that sense is pratyaksha only. When one experiences it, then his faith becomes very steady. In fact, that it is that pratyaksha which increases the faith in shabda also. So here, so one may say that all that is okay. Now you are telling that this is getting animated, but inside that there is a soul which is animating and all that. And this is only coverings of ahankar and all that. But I want to see that soul without any covering. You say, na, that spirit, the particle of spirit, I want to see it pratyaksha. I don't want any Anuman. Anuman is too vague. So if I want to pratyaksha, really see that living entity without any coverings, then can you show me? Of course, this person does not have the qualification. His heart is not pure. He has not practiced any of the transcendental processes to purify his heart. But still he wants to see the soul without any coverings. So Kapila Dev says, sure, it's possible. So he says, how? So he says, Bhuta Sukshmendriya Mano Buddhya Deshviha Nidraya Lineshwasati Yastatra Vinidro Nirahankriyaha Manyamanastadatmanam Anashto Nashtavan Mrisha Nashte Hankarane Drashta Nashta Vitta Iva Atura Evam Pratyama Marshyasu Atmanam Pratipadyate Sahankarasya Dravyasya Yovastanam Anugraha. He says that Yaha Vinidraha, that Jiva who remains alert, when Nirahankriyaha, without ego. But without ego here means the products of ego. The products of ego are mind, intelligence, senses, gross covering, subtle covering, everything. Nirahankriyaha, without coverings. Two possibilities. One is, if he has become liberated, that is at one stage when all the gross and subtle coverings are removed. Another situation where he is not qualified for liberation, but still the gross and subtle coverings are removed, that is at the time of dissolution. At the time of Brahmaji's, when the life of Brahmaji gets over, when all the living entities merge into the body of Mahavishnu, at that point of time, the gross and subtle coverings are removed. And the living entity goes into the body of Mahavishnu. At that point of time, a living entity who is Vinidra, who is little alert, okay, Bhuta Sukshma Indriya Mano Buddhyadishu. So when merging all the products of ego, mind, intelligence, subtle senses, gross senses, everything is removed. But he himself is not lost. Of course, the living entity doesn't die. Natvevaham jato nasham. Anashtaha. He has not died. But nashte ahankarane. But the ahankar has died. So ahankar means the products of ahankar. That with which he was identifying till now, the gross and subtle coverings, they are lost. Nashte ahankarane. But mrisha manyamanaha. Looking that the ahankar has lost, or the product, or the gross and subtle coverings are gone, he falsely thinks, atmanam nashtavat. He thinks that I am dead. Atmanam nashtavat mrisha manyamanaha. He is thinking that I am dead. Evam pratyavamarshya. But after careful reconsideration, he thinks, if I am dead, then how am I thinking? Who is thinking? Who is considering all these things? Then he realizes, actually I am not dead. What is dead is the gross and subtle covering, which I have been falsely identifying as the self. That's how he is thinking. Then he, which means this is self-realization. He has realized that I am not this body, gross or subtle. I am the soul. But how does he feel? Nashta vitta iva atura. It is mentioned that just like a very rich person having lost his wealth, he feels like really despondent after losing his wealth. Similarly, the living entity in the body of Mahavishnu, when he realizes that I am not this body, I am the spirit soul, he feels extremely despondent. He is very much depressed with his forced self-realization. So that realization which brings the bliss of Brahmananda in the yogis and gyanis makes this personality very much depressed. He thinks, unfortunately, I am not this gross and subtle body. When will that day be mine? When I will again get back this grass and subtle covering so that I can enjoy. Kabe habe bolo seidi namar. He's thinking like that. Asau atmanam pratipadyate. He attains understanding of the existence of the atma. Yaha ahankarasya dravyasya avastanam. So he realizes it is the spirit soul which has been animating all this grass and subtle coverings. This grass and subtle coverings are inanimate. I am not these grass and subtle coverings, but I am this animating living entity. When he realizes this, he feels how unfortunate. How unfortunate that I am not this grass or subtle covering. And then he waits patiently. Okay, it's... It is there, but it's not activated. Yeah, it's not activated to... which means he still has material desires. He wants to still enjoy separately from Krishna, but the facility to enjoy separately from Krishna is gone. So, if removal of grass and subtle covering should give bliss of liberation, then ghosts should get at least half bliss, isn't it? At least the grass covering is removed. But ghosts, we know, are like quite disturbed living entities. They are very much despondent. They are looking for some grass covering. And this personality inside the body of Mahavishnu at that point of time is still more disturbed because he has lost his subtle covering also. Because with the subtle body, at least some kind of subtle enjoyments one can have access to. But this living entity has lost access to this subtle body also. So, we might think that why this material nature gives us this grass and subtle coverings. If only we did not have this grass and subtle covering, you know, I would not be bewildered. I would be so much happy. But actually it's not the case. It's exactly the opposite. It's only because the subtle and grass coverings are there, our distress is sort of mitigated. If the subtle covering and grass covering are prematurely taken away, then the living entity is in much more distress than, you know, having those coverings and whatever distress that comes out of it. It's actually to give this subtle and grass covering is actually an act of compassion with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, this forced self-realization brings in lot of distress. Forcefully taken to the spiritual world or forcefully, you know. We may say that why shouldn't the Lord take us back to the spiritual world? It would be so nice. Actually, it won't be very nice because there the center of attraction for everyone is Krishna. And no one even bothers to look at this person. Unless he is willing to engage in Krishna's service also. So it can become quite depressing even in the spiritual world. And there is shastric proof for it. Kapiladev describes the situation of this living entity inside the body of Mahavishnu. He is eagerly waiting, please give me back my grass and subtle coverings. And then the Lord says, okay, sleep. So he's put back to sleep because it's a very painful situation. So all living entities inside Mahavishnu's body are sleeping. This one person sort of, you know, took off his bedsheet and he was started looking and, you know, he had this forceful realization. So again, put back to sleep. So we discussed this morning, you know, it's like before the pain of operation subsides, if the effect of anesthesia, you know, is removed or it wanes away, then the person starts screaming. Even though it's an unnatural position for him, to be under anesthesia is unnatural, but it is needed at that situation because, you know, his stomach is cut. Okay? So therefore he is put back. He is given back that anesthesia. Like that. So here Kapila Dev says that actually he is giving one Shabda Praman for us. He is giving Shabda Praman of a pratyaksha. A person had, even without qualification. Only, or basically he is telling only under such situations, a person even without qualification can see the living entity without any external covering. Self-realization without qualification is possible only during the time of dissolution, and it's a very painful thing. See, he is ignorant means, I mean, he is not ignorant in the sense that he doesn't anymore think that he is the gross or subtle body. But at the same time, he has this desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. That desire is there. And he is looking for some facility. You give it in the form of gross and subtle body or some other way, doesn't matter. What is the chance that? Oh, why we will not still understand? Yeah, because this is one information we get. But so many lifetimes of actual some experience of enjoyment that we have already had through this gross and subtle coverings, it is there. So those impressions are very deep rooted. So only by a very steady and determined practice of devotional service, slowly those impressions would be wiped out. So just by knowing, one need not become realized. Like that, lot of information we have. You know, we keep collecting you know, information like that. But
just some time before we had discussed that the jiva is always pure, the soul is always pure, the gunas and the mind is actually what contaminates.
And I didn't say that.
In the flow of when Kapil Dev is speaking to Devahuti.
I didn't say that. Before you speak the next part of the question, I didn't say that the gunas contaminate the living entity.
Gunas don't contaminate. Gunas act on the, when the jiva is identifying himself with the subtle body, with the mind. And then the gunas act on the mind. So, the jiva always remains pure.
Yeah, the jiva always remains pure. That is true. But this jiva, who is forcefully removed of his, coverings, is still a conditioned soul. It is not having a gross or subtle covering that makes him conditioned. He is conditioned, that's why he gets a gross and subtle covering. Understand, na? So he still has material desires. That's why he gets a gross and subtle covering to fulfill those desires. So material desires are not generated out of gross and subtle covering. It is because we have gross and material desires, that's why to facilitate it, gross and subtle coverings are given.
So, Prabhuji, usually we say that the desires are stored on the mind, and when from one life to another life we go, the mind is actually carried over. So, therefore, the desires, the impressions are carried away. So, that means there is some other method to store those desires.
Yeah, correct. It's there. Just like we might have some data in our laptop and we have some backup in a hard drive, same way. The exact impressions may not be there, how we enjoyed, but the desire to enjoy is there. Free will is there.
Yeah.
Chitta also, as we read, now it's like an additional, external addition only. But all these functions of mind, chitta, intelligence, etc., the soul inherently has the capacity to perform those functions on the spiritual platform. So, the exact impressions of how he enjoyed may not be available, but the desire to enjoy is there with the soul, that is there.
The next creation, how that all those impressions are again given, that's by the arrangement of the Lord.
Yeah.
Like that.
If the Lord can remove all that and put it in compartment, he can again take it back and fit it with the jiva and send. There must be some mechanism, definitely. Okay, so that's about if one wants to actually, without qualification, have self-realization, he says one has to wait till then, and that's not going to be a very pleasant experience. That's what Kapila Dev is mentioning. Anyway, after hearing this, Mother Devahuti has some serious doubts. So she says, Devahuti ruvacha purusham prakritir brahman navi munchati karhichit anyonya pashrayatvacha nityatvadanayo prabho. So, for the next three verses, Prabhupada and Vishnu Chakradhakur give slightly different translation. First, we will look at Vishnu Chakradhakur's translation, then we'll get back to Prabhupada's translation. Both mean the same, but they approach it in a slightly different way. So, it is said, O Brahmana, Kapila Dev, prakritir purusham na vimunchati. You never see prakriti giving up the Lord. Why? Karhichit, at any time she never gives up. Because she has taken shelter. Mayam chatad apashrayam. She doesn't cover the Lord, but she takes shelter of the Lord. So she never gives up the shelter of the Supreme Lord. Nityatvad apashrayatvad. Because she has eternal attraction for the Supreme Lord, so she never gives up the Supreme Lord. Anyonya anayoho. Because there is eternal attraction between them. It's a anyonya apashraya. As Rishabh Dev says, mito hridaya granti. It's a dual knot, which means if one party cuts it, it's still not cut. It's still there. Both parties have to cut. Only then the knot of attraction between male and female is completely cut. So it's a very tough knot. Mito hridaya granti, Rishabh Dev talks. So here, Kapila Dev says something similar. He says, it's a anyonya apashraya, which means one person wants to take shelter, the other person is very eager to give shelter. Both are there. So therefore, purusham prakritir na vimunchati karhichit. You never see prakriti being separate from the Supreme Lord. And then, he gives an analogy. Yata gandasya bhumescha nabhavo vyatirekataha apam rasasya cha yata tata buddhe parasya cha. Yata gandasya bhumescha nacha bhavo vyatirekataha. You never see earth existing without fragrance. They are tightly bound with each other. And taste, water existing without taste. Okay? It's not possible if it's pure water. Of course, if it is processed and so then it may lose its taste, but otherwise pure water always exists with taste. Similarly, the Lord does not exist separate from prakriti, because just like the tanmatra has taken apashraya, ashraya of the element, and the element very much wants to give ashraya to the tanmatra. Similarly, the Lord very much wants to give shelter to prakriti, and prakriti also very much wants to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. So in this anyonya apashraya situation, that's why you never see any time Prakriti giving up the shelter of the Supreme Lord. This is an observation which Mother Devahuti is sharing with Kapila Dev. But this is also an analogy that she is using. She says, Akartur karma bando yam purushasya yadashrayah guneshu satsu prakritih kaivalyam teshvatakatam. So she says, this jiva, akartuhu, he is not the doer. Karma bandaha, but he becomes bound up by action. Why? Prakritehe guneshu purushasya satsu. Because the gunas of prakriti remain with the jivatma. Because of his identification. Yad ashraya, because he has taken shelter of, and she is also willing to give shelter to the living entity. Kaivalyam teshu atak katam. How then is liberation possible? So the prakriti wants to give shelter to jivatma, and jivatma wants to take shelter of the living entities. So therefore it's a anyonya apashraya. Both of them have taken shelter of each other's association. So therefore, I don't think, you are talking about liberation, I don't think it's very easy. So it seems like a very impractical solution to me. I mean, you spoke about the process, liberation through Jnana Yoga seems impractical to me because both have taken shelter of each other. And another reason she says in the next verse, Kvachit tattvava marshena nivrittam bayam ulbanam anivrittanimit tattvat punah pratyavatishtate. So she says, Kvachit. See, the solution that you have given, it's not that I have not tried it. She says, you spoke about understanding the nature of body, understanding the nature of soul, and trying to understand that you are not this body. Tattva avamarsha means reflecting on the nature of things, nature of elements. Sometimes, kvachit, bhayam ulbanam nivrittam. Sometimes this fear of samsara goes away. But puna pratyavatishtate. But again that fear returns. Why? Anivritta nimittatvad. Because the cause of that samsara, because of not destroying the samsara's cause, which is material desires, they are not gone completely. Whatever may be the cause of samsara, that is not gone. So you may reflect that you are not this body, you are the soul. I have also reflected. It's not that first time Mother Devahuti is hearing, oh really, I thought I was this body. It's not like that. She had heard about the nature of body, nature of soul before. She had reflected on it, and now she's sharing that it helped me, but it only temporarily helped me. Punah pratyavatishtade, but that fear again returns. Because the root cause of that fear or samsara is not destroyed. So therefore, I am wondering, does it really work? I don't think that the process that you have given is a foolproof process which can actually lead to permanent liberation of the living entity from the clutches of Maya. Because one reason she gives is there is anyonya apashraya, and second reason she gives is this process seems too incompetent to actually give liberation, because I have tried it. Reflecting on you are not this body, you are the soul, I don't think that works. I don't think that actually gives a permanent solution. It's only a stopgap solution. And I have tried it out. That's what she is sharing with Kapila Dev. In one sense, she is challenging. Kapila Dev says, yes, this can give liberation. She says, I don't think so. So which means, there is scope for discussion between the disciple and guru if the proposal given by the guru is not convincing. That does not, it's not a cynical approach, but for the purpose of clarification, okay, one can always approach. Or sometimes the spiritual master gives such proposals to test the disciple also, like in the case of Parikshit Maharaj. So he asked, you know, how could these people suffering in hell be saved? So he says, oh, atonement, karmakandi atonement. And Parikshit Maharaj said, drishta shrutabhyam yat papam janan api atmano ahitam karoti bhuyo vivashah prayaschittam atokatam. I don't think this process of prayaschitta works, because even though the living entity knows that such a particular action is detrimental, he still helplessly commits that sin and again performs prayaschitta. I don't, where is this prayaschitta destroying his desire to perform that activity? And he says that kvachit nivartate badrat kvachit charati tatpunaha prayaschittam ato apartam manye kunjara shauchavat. Same thing that Devahuti says, that he says the same thing. Kvachit, sometimes after withdrawing from sin, then one commits the sin again. Atho, therefore, manye prayaschittam apartam. I consider this atonement as useless. So, then Shukadeva Goswami agrees. He says, correct, you are right. Karmana karma nirharo nahi atyantika ishyate. Complete destruction of karma doesn't happen just by prayaschitta. Why? Avidvat adhikaritvat prayaschittam vimarshanam. Avidvat adhikaritvat, because even that prayaschitta is done in ignorance only. Even that person performing prayaschitta still does not have the knowledge that he is not this body, he is the soul. So he is somehow wanting to get rid of that sin so that he can enjoy more. So therefore, by karma or by prayaschitta, one does not completely destroy. So he says, prayaschittam vimarshanam. So real atonement is attaining jnana. And then he explains this jnana, tapasa brahmacharyena shamena cha damena cha. Later he says, venugulmam ivanala kshipantyagam mahat api venugulmam ivanala. And such a process can destroy even the greatest of sins, just like a forest fire destroys a forest of bamboo. The acharyas explain that very interesting analogy Kapiladev uses here. Generally, whenever in Shastras, you know, destruction of, complete destruction is indicated by bhakti, the analogy that is generally used is blazing fire consuming firewood. Okay, that does a complete thorough job. But in the case, in this case, he uses the example of forest fire destroying bamboo. Only superficially it looks very looks like a thorough job. Everything looks black till shower, you know, till rain comes. When the rain comes, because the root is not destroyed, again the whole forest becomes healthy and the bamboo again shoots up again. So finally he says, kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dunvanti katsnena niharam eva bhaskara. So he establishes this very systematically. So here a very valid point raised by Mother Devahuti, that I have tried it and it didn't work for me. So I really doubt this process that you are giving, that this path of Jnana Yoga, which involves reflecting on the nature of things, I don't think it's really capable enough to give liberation. So I beg to differ from your opinions. Like that, Devahuti has presented her case. So we'll see tomorrow, it's already time. So tomorrow we'll see some purport points also from these objections that Mother Devahuti has raised. And also we'll continue the rest of the chapter tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.